Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hardly anything gets the imagination about the Middle Ages going like castles. A fortress on a hill, perhaps surrounded by a moat. Curtain walls, a keep, and towers. Just like the Middle Ages can mean a lot of things. So there are many differences from the fortifications on the early medieval period to the ornate baroque palaces that had little to do with defense. Today, we'll take a break from the people's stories of kings and bishops and look at the landscape of castles throughout the centuries. There's a reason for the timing. We are about to embark upon the Crusades, and that will change European ideas of fortifications a lot. So now it's our chance to put a few topics we have been talking about into perspective. Life of the nobility, castles, when and where and why. So let's just talk some castles. Welcome to the History of Germany podcast with Travis Dow and me, Judith Strusenberg.
Yes, and where we are in the chronological order, the last couple episodes, is somewhere in the 11th century, let's say, and the Crusades are just getting, the First Crusade is in, has already happened. Europeans kind of marching towards the Middle East and building fortifications are in full swing, and castles, right now in this time, are just completely being changed, evolved. It's an arms race of bigger walls, bigger moats, bigger technology, siege technology. And it's happening so fast that we're going to stop and take a look at what happened before, what happened after, because we've also been describing a lot of kings and emperors, kaisers, popes, and there was also a social life and social order in the castles, a village within a village, markets outside of the marketplace, and all those things in castles. And that also changed a lot. In hundreds of years, castles existed for, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years. So, we're going to kind of slow down and look at this. And if you know nothing of German history and you just know English history, you still probably know this time period as significant because also in England, for instance, castles changed, I want to say overnight, but you know, in one generation, the landscape was almost completely different. Definitely, you know, stone castles were being built in a very different fashion and manner now, because 1066 is also when the Battle of Hastings happened and the Normans conquered England from the Saxons, Anglo-Saxons. And so we go from, yeah, well, okay, so now we can start talking about castles. And there, we can go way back. We can go to Roman fortifications and, you know, all these kind of palisades. But do you know, Judith, what a Mott and Bailey is? Because I don't know in German. I kind of want to look it up so that you understand. But does that tell you anything, Mott and Bailey?
Is it something to drink?
Nice. Yes. No. Nice. That's a good guess. It's kind of a creamy, it's kind of like a white Russian, but no.
Yeah.
It's, imagine you have a fortified town on a hill, the Mott. So you have a raised platform with a wooden wall and then stone wall around it. And then you have a second hill outside the first one, outside the town. And that's the Bailey. And so it's actually a town of two parts. One fortification, but the Bailey is more fortified. That's where the king, the duke, whatever would live. And then there was this town around. And So attackers, the Mott was easier to defend, to attack, and then the Bailey. So it's kind of like double layer of protection. Motte. Okay, so in German, yeah. It's probably a German word. Look at that, people. We all learn together. Mott comes from German, from the word Motte, which is a really old... so it also existed in Germany. This is the Anglo-Saxon way of building. So a Motte by itself, a Mott by itself, that's like a Celtic hill fort would be a huge Motte. So when Julius Caesar came to Gaul and explained what an oppida was, a fortified sort of Celtic hill town, then he's actually describing a Mott without the Bailey. The Bailey is... Now we're in the Middle Ages. We have our Herzoge, our dukes, and we have our nobility, our Grafen, and all these nobility, even the kings and Kaiser and things. They now have their little beginning of the castle. That's the Bailey. And in the Bailey, I need to look up another word in German, but in the Bailey is the keep. And the keep, I don't know, like in Karlstein, in the Czech Republic, there was the castle, and then inside the castle was one tower where the walls were just twice as thick. And castle walls are thick, let's say 1 meter thick. The keep might actually be 2 meter thick walls. It's like a castle within the castle. So if the castle is conquered and the people are coming into the courts, then you gather to the keep. Oh, it was in Lord of the Rings. Everyone's like, go to the keep, okay? That was, they breached the walls, retreat to the keep. That's, yeah, exactly. Oh, the donjon. Okay, so in German they use the word dungeon, which comes from French, which is where we get our word dungeon from. But that's, that was the center part of the castle. In English, if we say dungeon, in German that's Kerker, so it's, das ist was anderes.
Meinst du den Bergfried?
Oh, the Belfry would be like, if it was like a monastery, yeah, right? It would be like the last defensible position.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in some castles, you might think of it as the great tower. It's like the tower in the middle, and then there's smaller towers outside. I can think of, like, if you've ever seen the ruins of the Coucy? C-O-U-C-Y. It's in France, north of Paris. It's like, there's the keep, and then there's like five towers or four towers around it. So it looks like a big tower with other towers around. So it's like the keep in the castle. But this idea of, so the keep is the last defensible position of the duke or the king or whatever. So even in the 11th century, even, you know, 1,000 years ago, they'd have Mott and Bailey. You have the town, you have the Bailey, it's kind of like the castle with the keep inside. So that kind of happens. In England, Edward I started to build second walls around the whole thing. And that's, if you think of a castle, that you're actually thinking of the walls around everything. Yeah, another thing to mention is, okay, I don't remember, in the Saxon episodes about Ottos, I think I mentioned in the 10th or 11th century is when you start to see actual stone walls. Before then, it was, even if it was kind of considered a castle, it would be a wooden palisade, a wooden fortification.
Wooden structures, yes.
Yeah.
Perhaps we can...
We mentioned that
here, talk
briefly,
about the etymology of the word castle, because it comes from the Latin word castrum, which means a fortified military camp, and this was of course done with a wooden structure. Yeah.
So the original idea was to be as Roman as possible, and so they're copying the legionnaires' camps. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so one interesting thing, before we even define castles, because I just want to mention, people might think of, if they think of like fortress or fortifications, they might think of like it's a medieval thing. But actually, so Because one thing I want to mention is, in German, you have Schloss and Burg. And Americans all know this. Like, oh, there's Schloss Neuschwanstein, and there's a Burg, which is like, oh, even like Regensburg or some, you know, some town name.
Nuremberg.
Nuremberg, yeah. Burg. So it could, even Nuremberg, it could mean a defensible hill. So Berg and Burg is like hill. One means hill and one means fortress. But really, it's the same thing. It's like we live on this Nuremberg or Regensburg. It's just like we live on this defensible place. And Nuremberg has a castle on the hill. So it's definitely, you know, that kind of idea. The other thing I want to mention is, so while it might have started in ideas we got from Romans, Celts, we mentioned, had these oppida, the same sort of idea, and it actually went on to, I would say, the last fortresses were all the way, basically, what would you consider the Maginot Line, or the bunkers in Czechoslovakia that they built against Germany, or even, like, Belgium in the 1930s, had these massive fortifications that could fend off the biggest gun of their time, which then the Germans just built bigger guns. And that was kind of the problem of castles. And I would say up until the 1930s, people built
with the philosophy
of a castle. Like, the philosophy is we can be shot at and defend ourselves. After 1930s, it was like So to give one, I would say the last castles, the last fortresses, Burg, the word Burg, were built in the, like, 1890s in Belgium, and were the best in the world. And it took the Germans, like, in World War One, it took them a week. You know, they built a bigger gun, and they lost tens of thousands of troops, of soldiers, but it was not enough. So, I mean, but the idea of castles existed until pretty recently. Now, it's like, well, we have airplanes. We have a nuclear bomb, you know. But the idea of Saddam Hussein's bunker with the layers of concrete and something that can resist a bomb, the idea is the same. The idea is there's barbarians at the gates, but I'm safe. I have a safe house. I can stay here and live through a siege. And as long as I don't run out of food and water, I'm fine. The idea is
pretty similar.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, from the, I think, the end of the 15th century on, there were castles built not for fighting, but for representation, not for fortification.
In German, you can actually, there's a word. So Schloss, like Schloss Neuschwanstein, is a great example of a castle that makes no sense defensively. It is a mansion. And in German, you could say, there's a couple different words. Like, you could say Schloss, which we don't differentiate. That's castle. One castle is defensive, and one castle is more like a palace, like Versailles.
Yes.
So we would call Versailles a castle. Germans are like, that's not a Burg. you know, there's
in German,
a tank.
You would say Schloss, yes.
Yeah, it's Schloss, you know.
Yeah.
So it's more like in English, we might say palace. And absolutely. So starting, like, let's say 500 years ago, you know, these Italian mansions and villas and palaces, there might be a wall around them, but not seriously, not for defense. One believed, like, if everyone knew if war broke out, I gotta go.
If you want to keep it simple, you say Burg. Mm-hmm. It's medieval and it's fortified.
Yeah, like for defense. Yeah.
Yes, and if you say Schloss, it's newer than medieval times, and it's not made to defend it.
Yep. Yeah. It's more like to show off wealth. Just like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
For representation.
Oh, yeah. Like,
show
like in
wealth.
Even in Czech Republic, they would say chateau a lot. Like, in German, you might say, oh, chateau. Like, that's a nice villa. Like, that's a nice mansion. Whereas in English, we might call that a castle because we just call everything castle. But yeah, in Czech, there was the same thing. There was like zámek, which was like schloss, like fortress. It's the same word as lock, like a where you need a key. So like a zámek is like something that is like it's locked, it's safe. And then they would have say château. It just spelled Czech, like château.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's okay. So that's schloss and burg, you know.
Schloss and burg. Mm-hmm. Come both from the German word to close.
Yep. Schließen. Yep, exactly.
Yes.
Yep. They actually, zámek is the same word as Schloss. Now that you mention, of course, yeah, Schloss is also the thing that you, Oh, that's true. I never make that connection. Yeah. Schloss. Schloss is also like a padlock that you put on your garage or your bike. A bike lock is a Fahrradschloss. Yep. It's a bicycle castle.
And burg comes from a Greek word, burgos, which means a safe place, also closed in a way. Funny, it's very interesting, I think.
I think that, because burgos, there was another word, there was a Celtic word. Oh, okay, yeah, when I was learning about Prague, they're trying to explain what the word means, and there's a Celtic word that means braga, which means fortress, which means like defendable place on a hill. Okay, it's burg, simple. But braga, it's almost like it has the same letters, like braga. You know, burg, braga. Like you just think like, oh, that's related. They're both Indo-European languages, so there's this idea of, and even berg, the German word for hill. It's just like, well, what do you do on a hill? You defend yourself. There's no water on a hill. There's no forest on a hill. It's dangerous. You know, there's the sun. It's you're exposed to the elements. But what you can do is defend yourself from other people. So it's really interesting. So, yeah, but then people started to get fancy, these really ornate Baroque things like you mentioned. But you did mention, so like castrum from the Latin word of like a, like a legionnaire's camp, I guess.
Yeah.
So and also, so in English we have the word castrate, which is the same in German, kastrieren, which means to cut off from the rest of society. Let's just leave it. Let's just leave that one alone. I'm getting uncomfortable. But yeah, it's you know, to separate. Like it's you're safe in a way, but it's also like in the nobility sense, it's like I'm segregated, like I'm better than you, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Castellum. So castrum is okay. Castellum is a little castle. Okay. A castellum is little castrum, and castle actually means it comes from the little version. So I guess there's a really obvious question, which is like, why don't we have castles today? Why do we not still build castles? I know I kind of mentioned that with Belgium, because Germans ruined it. No, I mean...
You build a castle in Anaheim.
That's true. It's not defensible, though. Mickey Mouse doesn't like... Well, I don't know, maybe. The thing is, so... Castles, of course, originally came out of a very practical necessity. It was just very... There's this complicated, slow transition from people living in a tribal society to feudalism. And I want to be careful, because when that happened, how that happened, and where that happened is very different. Like if we're talking about like England or Germany or but in Germany and France, it's mostly there's Charles the Great, and then we have Franks, and they really started to have the first sort of feudal where the nobility got land from the emperor, and therefore the nobility owed something to the emperor. They also had peasants underneath them. So you start to see a feudalism where there's a military on top, and then, you know, causing protection for the peasants, and then that protection evolved into castles, city walls. Okay. We see the same in Japan, we see the same in China, we see the same in India. We see there's very similar fortifications of like Inca in South America. So it's like we think of as like there's definitely a European style of castles, definitely. But but it was functional. It wasn't, you know, later crazy Ludwig of Bavaria built Neuschwanstein, but with taxpayer money. But at first, everybody wanted there to be castles because it was for protection, I guess. I mean, there was a need for castles.
Yes, of course. I think the historical background for the castle construction was a power construction of the medieval ages with its estate society. So one can say originally the king lent a nobleman with a good, which is called beneficium, the Latin word. Bishops could only get a castle or a place to build a castle. And this place had to be protected, had to be built. And originally, after the death, it fell back to the feudal lord, to the king or whoever. And
also with peasants. That's actually a good point. Yep. Is if even if you had a wife and children, sometimes there was some deal worked out where, like, okay, the children now work the farm. But there was a good chance that if the husband died, the land and house went back to the lord. And everything in the house, the tools, everything in the house belonged to the lord. And the women and children had to, like, just suddenly have no possessions, no
house. Got homeless. You know.
Yes. Yeah, just absolutely homeless. No social social net, nothing. That is how it worked. That's a good point.
That's how it worked until Ottonian times, where it began to change. Then the good was transferred to the son, who had to swear again to the landlord, to the feudal lord, to serve him, and so on.
Now, what's really interesting, and was definitely different than kind of what separates Germany apart, maybe, Germany and France from, like, England, is in England you have these ancient traditions, almost, a township, call it a shire. You know, there's hobbits living, I don't care, but there's, like, these ancient settlements. Charlemagne and the Franks, like, a couple hundred years before, they were, like, somewhere in Scandinavia, then they were in, you know, pushing on the Roman boundaries, then they were in Belgium, and then suddenly under Charlemagne they exploded, and, you know, the whole Frankish Empire, France, Germany, Italy. Now the thing is, Charlemagne, so everything changed is my point. There was the Great Migration, you know, everything kind of changed. And when Charlemagne started to rule his kingdom, one point I made over and over and over again is, remember, there was no capital city. Charlemagne loved Aachen and he loved, you know, certain cities, but he traveled. He ruled on horseback, and so did Otto, so did, you know, several Ottos. The Saxons did this, but the Franks definitely. Everywhere he brought his court with him. So everywhere the king was, that's where the capital of Francia was. And so this is like the 9th century. Charlemagne started to build projects, castles, churches, monasteries, everything. But really, everything belonged to him. Everything was if you thought of castle, you thought of, oh, that's Charlemagne's thing. Nobody else builds castles. Frederick II. But slowly, you do see, like, even... Okay, so there's so much history here. But remember, even in Charlemagne's time, we talked about, like, the Frisians. So, like, in northern Germany, then in the there was no nobility, and they hated nobility. They hated knights. They didn't need knights. They didn't like feudalism, you know, the free Frisians. And they had laws against castles, because castle equals power, equals... Like, today we might think of, like, a castle equals a dictatorship. Because if someone can build a castle, they can tell me what to do. That, you know, they have knights, they have swords. I don't have a sword. I'm just a farmer. But the person in the castle, he has authority. I don't like that, so no castles, please. That's what the Frisians did. Frisia is on the Dutch border, or, like, West Frisia is actually in the Netherlands. So right up there on the North Sea, they were very, like, egalitarian, even under Charles the Great and after. But later, there started to be some laws on who could build castles, like very specific what they could do, what not. There's so in Frisia, we mentioned some examples of there could not be a stone building more than five stories high or something like that, or so many meters high, because that would be like, oh, that's, you're trying too hard. That's a tower. That's a castle. And you could also not build a basement that was more than a story or two down, because maybe that was like a dungeon. And, you know, so it's just kind of like, no, we don't like this. But you also see it was nobility's privilege. But like, for instance, like to jump ahead a little bit, there was two ordinances in the 13th century, one in 1220, one in 1232, which like forbade the construction of a castle in a church jurisdiction without their permission. But also that same kind of law allowed princes, like principalities, princes to build castles in their own domain, in their own fiefdom, without royal approval. But like, you see, so there's the Sachsenspiegel in the 13th century. You did need definition. There was a definition that you needed approval for. Then someone would come out. It's kind of like getting an inspector. Now, if you're building a house, someone inspects the electricity, inspects the plumbing and the water. In the 13th century, there was a judge of the land that would represent the king and come out to your fiefdom and say, oh, yeah, but you only need a wall. All you need is a wall. It cannot be higher than 10 meters. It cannot have towers, it cannot have parapets, or it can have a rampart, or, you know, like a Frisian one was like, you cannot dig deeper than a man with his spade can eject earth. So that means, yes, like throwing distance. Like, how far up can you throw dirt with a shovel? That's how low your basement can be.
Must lead to the ground floor.
Yep.
And without a permission, you were only allowed to build a wall which is not higher than a rider can grab.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yep. So nothing you need siege technology for. We know this today. The government says we have nuclear weapons and jet fighters. You private citizens may not. The state militia, the National Guard, can have tanks and flamethrowers. The state militia can have Hummers and Jeeps and assault rifles. The sheriff, you know, you give, it's a hierarchy of power. It's a hierarchy of, you know, defense. So the federal government today can come to any state and reconquer it because they have jets. The king of the German Kaiser could go to any castle without siege equipment, only with knights, because like you just said, you know, you cannot be taller than a knight can reach on horseback, which means a catapult, anything can shoot right, an archer can shoot right over it. So you could throw fire over it.
Just a wall which was built without permission, of course. Yep. If the judge of the land was there and said, yeah, you're allowed to build a castle, everything's all right, then they could build a real castle. Changed, of course, at the latest from the 11th century onwards. Then the construction of castles was allowed without royal approval by counts and dukes, and from the end of the 12th century on, also by the lower nobility.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of the things that almost defines German history is this 1,000-year-old splintering of power, like the dukes and the fiefdoms get more and more power, and the Kaiser gets less and less power. To the point where when Napoleon came in, he was actually fighting 1,100 little fiefdoms and not a Kaiser, yes, almost.
Yeah, but
we see this. Now we're talking slow, like hundreds of years.
Still, yeah, the right of opening, which means the highest landlord was always assured to use the castle as a base or a retreat in the event of a warlike conflict. But in practice,
Yeah.
Yeah, it was often
in practice,
difficult.
Listen to the last five episodes where how many anti-kings and kings and yeah, it's kind of crazy. If you were a rich duke, you couldn't just build a castle on your land. Someone would tell the Kaiser.
Hey, it's a nice day, let's build a castle. Yeah. No, not that easy. It wouldn't be Germany if you wouldn't have a lot of paperwork and
paperwork. Seriously, yeah. There was a contract.
Seriously.
Of like, yep,
it
visitation
hasn't
rights
changed
and
since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually that kind of interesting. The bureaucracy was there in a way. Like, So let's see, to go all the way back, I mean, so just to kind of summarize where we are, I mean, because we're talking about hundreds of years here. Merovingians
still
and Franks did have, you
years.
Know, we talked about that. Like, I talked about that 20 episodes ago of their Clodvic building these royal residences, but mostly still wooden structures. But in France, you can see some of those really old Frankish under the Merovingians. There's fortifications for sure. Then the Franks exploded. So in the like 8th to 10th century, we see more than 1,000 long term like permanent settlements and castles and towns being built in from, you know, Roman cities like Cologne and Trier being fortified and rebuilt to like new buildings and new cities and all this. And we talked about that. And remember, okay, when the Normans come, the Vikings. Okay, so I was going to skip the Viking history, but actually we got some listener requests of saying, please tell us about Vikings more, like talk about specifically Vikings in the 800s, right after Charlemagne. And so I talked to the History of Vikings podcast, Noah, and he's going to be on the show, and we're going to do a show on Vikings, and you win, whatever, shut up. So, 9th century, though, when the Vikings were coming, of course, that was scary. Suddenly, you have Vikings going all the way up the Rhine, all the way to, like, Cologne, way further than Cologne, even. Jesus, I don't even remember my geography, but they went of the tributaries to the Rhine. Then they would pull their boats over land and get on the Danube. I mean, or, you know, other rivers. So they were just like, where you wouldn't expect Vikings. Bah, surprise, we're here. And that was scary. And so people started to build. That was the first, like, town fortifications where it's like, I don't care what the king says or the bishop says. We're building a stone wall. Because there's Vikings coming in the spring. You know, we have four, like, we know this. And then you see the same thing when the Hungarians came. The Magyars just cruised through Europe, nothing stopping them until the Battle of Lech, 955. So, they went all the way, like, to the Spanish border. They went up to, you know, through France like there's nothing. Just on a joyride through Europe. When that happened, like we know, like under Heinrich the First, Henry the First, Widukind of Corvey, like the Saxon chroniclers, like tell us, people built castles. That definitely happened.
It was a building order by the king. Yes, he said there should be a castle built for the population.
Protect yourselves.
Protection against the Hungarians, of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, like there was laws set up, you know, like economic changes, like, you know, what was it? It was like every 10th, every 9th person had to, would be selected. They would come live in the castle so that he could like work in the castle, build the apartments, you know, for others. And then the other 8 would come in and manage the actual crop, make sure that they can have food and eat. And so there was this whole system of castle building in this time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 80% of the population would feed the other 20 that would be building. And it was kind of some places it was a lottery. It was just like, okay, you come live in the castle and you guys keep doing this and hurry up. The Hungarians are coming. We see more and more. So there's a place I want to get to in this episode, which we will, but the place I want to get to is the Prague Castle. Sorry, Judith. Surprise! I love... Surprise! My favorite city in the world is, of course, Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic. And the Prague Castle in the 16th century. We're not there yet. We're gonna jump around a little bit because I want to tell you, like, in the 16th century, if I had a time machine, let me put it this way. The reason I really care about this, the reason I'm really telling you this with a lot of passion and I love this topic is if I had a time machine, you know where I'd go if you've listened to my shows long enough, and that is like 1590s, 1600s, Prague Castle, Rudolf II's court and all that. The best bookstore, the best book market probably since the Library of Alexandria, maybe, arguably, I would say, was in that turn of the century in the Prague Castle. So in Prague, you have the main market and you have the main fortifications. There's even two castles, whatever. But the nobility lived near the Kaiser on the castle grounds. Remember, so this we're talking the German Empire still. This is like Habsburgs, so Austrian dynasties. But the Kaiser, all the nobility, the Schwarzenbergs, the Rosenbergs, all these German noble families, Austrian noble families, they would live up on the castle. And then there was a second market for... So this is... Oh my... They're like, there's so much cool history here. So did you know? Like, if you go to the Middle Ages in Germany, you and me, I don't know, were your aunt, do you have any famous ancestors, Judith, like nobility, or were you all peasants and farmers, or do you know that much about your ancestors? Like
300 or 400 years ago, I have, yes, they were farmers, they were not quite nobility. One of them was a craft person with a built the Lübecker Dom. Yes, yeah. It's the
definitely bourgeois, like top of the peasant class, like, you know, had some money, had some, you know, had a good life, middle class maybe today, but not nobility maybe.
No, so no queens nor.
Yeah, no Kaisers and Judiths.
No
past.
Kaisers, no. No.
Because at that time, it was fascinating, I think, that if you go to the town market where everybody goes, you will see onions, garlic, things, spices that people don't even use today. Spices that you need to be like a botany nerd, a herbalist nerd, to understand that in Europe, poorer people would go to the forest and pick plants like wild garlic, onions, and you know, those kind of things to spice in their food. And you would buy those things in the market in Old Town Square in Prague, as an example, or in Charles Square. If you were nobility, so not you and me, not our ancestors, you would go up to the Prague Castle and you would buy cinnamon and saffron and black peppercorn.
Yeah.
And you would not buy... You would buy garlic, because garlic is one of those spices that everybody likes. But you would not buy the local herbs and spices from the forest 3 miles away. That's peasant's food. And you wouldn't even... You wouldn't want that in your kitchen, and you wouldn't want that on your table, because it's a sign of shame. Like, it's a status thing. You want saffron and cinnamon and, you know, paprika and all those things.
Salt, and, of course.
Yeah, and that's actually what we eat today. We eat the nobility spices, but those were the things that you could only find in the castle market. And it was actually, so it's such a weird thing that we might not think about. But if you go to the town square, you find clothes made of linen, of wool, and kind of, you know, itchy clothing, you know, those kind of things. If you went up to the castle, you would find, in the 16th century, beautifully shaped mirrors for, you know, heating something from Italian Renaissance, some clocks from Nuremberg, some calendars from Nuremberg. You would see spices from India, from the New World already coming in to Vienna and Prague and Madrid and London. And you would see silk, and you would see, you know, just art from China and Japan. Like, no kidding, you know, in 1500, 1600. And
yeah,
you would not see that in the town square. And so it's actually a parallel. Here's something that the reason I'm wasting so much time on this idea is we don't understand this in America. Like, I'm an American. I go to Costco. We have everything. Bill Gates, he goes to Costco too. He might buy it online, but we buy the same. We both brush our teeth with Colgate, okay? Like, there's no, you know, like, there's no fancy golden toothpaste, and we both use Colgate. Colgate, whatever you, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And it's pronounced Colgate, though. And anyways, and, you know, even in America, it's like, oh, well, Bill Gates has a 50-inch Samsung TV, and I have a 40-inch Samsung TV, but we both go shopping at the same store. The thing is, in the Middle Ages, it was actually, we mentioned this before in other episodes, but it's by rank. So if I came in, if a count, and I'm wearing fur, fox fur, I can do that when I'm by myself and only my peasants, my bourgeoisie, are around me. If the Herzog comes for dinner to visit, he's like, hey, Count Travis, it's me, Wolfgang von Bayern. Then I'm like, oh, shit, hide the fur. Because when the Herzog of Bavaria walks in the room, only he can wear fur, not me. I can not wear my fox fur anymore, my beaver hat. Only that guy. And in fact, how much gold I wear, how many, the size of my chain, I have to lower it, make it smaller for the Herzog. I cannot dress better than the Herzog. And when the Kaiser comes to town, oh boy, like, strict. It's very strict. Like, what you could do, there's all kinds of formalities of, you know, like, you know, he had to be careful. Later, in the 13th, 14th, you know, this is happening slowly. As we, you know, in this time. Okay, so now you know, all right? Now you know that it's a parallel universe. You, as a peasant, you can't even go. You're like, oh, I want to go look at the, I want to go buy Galileo's book. You're not even going to know it exists because you don't know how to read, first of all. Why would you buy a book? You don't know how to read. Second, that book costs 10 years of your income as a peasant. And third, that book is being sold in the castle market, and you don't even have a reason to be in the castle market. You go to the castle door, the guard says, what's your business? What do you want? And you say, oh, I want to go buy Galileo's book. Pfft, get out of here. Go away. So you have...
And in fact, if you want to buy Galileo's book, you... had some trouble with the church.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you buying Galileo? You know,
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah.
So it's not how people, it's just really like, you have to put yourself in a totally different shoes. Like, you have to understand that you might see a gold chain, you might work in a castle kitchen. So you might be sprinkling saffron somewhere, but ooh, if they even see you tasting it, you might know what cinnamon smells like, but ooh, be careful. I mean, it's something you'll never taste, never see, never smell, other, you know, unless you can even go to the castle. So, yeah, totally parallel societies. When we say a castle, also when we say monasteries, when we talk about monasteries in previous episodes, and the next episode might be one of the next one or two episodes will be on Hildegard of Bingen, who was a nun. And you all know this, but when we say a monastery, we're talking a production economic center. It's a beer brewer, winemaker, brandy distiller, farming activities, farming research laboratories, a medical laboratory, maybe smelting, maybe definitely crafts, making clothing, making sandals, making shoes, making boots. There's a whole, you know, obviously copying books, creating Bibles, making parchment, it just goes on and on and on and on. It was a whole factory of a whole city, and we're just talking some dudes being monks or some women being nuns. And in this case, so you're talking a castle is the whole, it has its whole ecosystem. There's fishermen that bring the best fish to the castle. Hunters are nobility, so any deer and elk and all that stuff. There's no elk in Europe, but deer and moose go straight to the castle. You know, the ducks, the geese, that's all going to the castle. Nobody else has ever seen a cooked goose, maybe at Christmas or something, you know, in the later 17th, 18th centuries. But you know, a goose is something reserved for royalty, nobility, some kind of thing. So you might see a goose flying in the sky or in the pond. You better not shoot it. In fact, the right to own a bow, you might not have that right. So totally split society. So this is why we'll tell you about monastic life with Hildegard of Bingen, and we'll tell you about, we try to always tell you about peasants' life and what's happening. We just did that last time with Lothar. If you're interested, we tried to explain, you know, how a household lives, what they produce, what they're doing in the last episode with Lothar the Third, if you're curious. This episode is like, I want you to understand. Judith knows. Judith's been to Germany. Judith's spent her whole life in Europe. But Americans might not understand that it's a whole village within a village. And then the keep is a castle within a castle. And there's this onion rings of society. And it is so separate. A nobility that doesn't even want to be seen in the local market. And a local person can't. You know, person buying onions cannot buy cinnamon. It's just not even, it's out of their reach. Even if they had the money, they can't do it. So anyways, that it's just kind of something that, yeah, it's a whole different society than we understand today. And it's kind of hard to maybe paint an accurate picture. Don't you want a time machine and go to the Prague Castle?
Yeah, of course.
If you were, if you're a peasant,
sure.
Maybe not.
Oh, just for a day. See how life was. Of course, only if I could turn back here again.
Exactly. If I have all my Impfungen, if I have all my vaccines, because I'm going to get cholera and tachoma and all these horrible diseases, you know, I'll die from drinking the water, get an infection right away. So yeah, hopefully it's fine.
Leave your mobile at home. But so in other case, they would, burn you as a witcher. Yeah.
We can keep going down that road. You know, Versailles and the French court was like, you know, Marie Antoinette and the let them eat cake story. You know, it's just like they're so cut off from society. It just becomes more and more so, of course. But in the Frankish times, it was like, well, you know, I'm Frankish. I conquered you. So I'm nobility and you're not. It's kind of like an occupation kind of thing. But it started, you know, it happened organically. It happened over centuries. Basically from like Roman palisades to Versailles, kind of, you know, that's the thousand some years we're looking at. Hold on. Before we get back. Okay, so now we're going to talk about specific constructions of castles, where we are in the chronological order, under the Salians, under like Conrad II, which is, you know, Henry V, kind of where we were a couple of shows ago. But let me take a real quick break to give you one message from a couple of messages from our sponsors. We do have some promotion codes and deals for you. First and foremost, of course, check out the Podcastnik shop. But let me tell you more about that right now, and I'll try to keep this as short as possible. Not more than 2-3 minutes. Thanks so much. But the main announcement I want to drop in the middle of the show is we did interview both Judith and Imad. So Judith, you've been listening to, obviously. And Imad is a Syrian refugee who lives in Egypt now and translates this show, History of Germany, to Arabic. The purpose of that, the way he pitched it to me, was it's kind of for Syrian refugees living in Germany so they can understand where they live. And with that, this whole podcast has taken on a whole new mission of like a whole new purpose, which is like, let's help Imad, let's make his mission possible, because it's way more nobler than ours, which we're just kind of goofing around and having fun. Imad he's also great. I mean, he's just fun to listen to. He's just a kind of a great guy. And he's also not out of danger yet. So, I really would appreciate it. He's not, from where he is in Egypt, just being an atheist and bisexual is enough to kind of get you in trouble. And his whole story of how he fled, he was imprisoned and tortured and, you know, all this kind of traumatic things. We, you know, he was willing to sit down and talk about it. And it's a really great story. And we'd really appreciate it if you heard Imad's tale. And of course, you know, meet Yudit. That's not just her Twitter handle, but we also interviewed Yudit, and that's on the Podcastnik. Both of those are on the Podcastnik feed. If you go to podcastnik.com, there's a new podcast, I guess, technically, where I can kind of do whatever I want. And that's just called Podcastnik. You'll find it on Acast. You'll find it on podcastnik.com. There's an accompanying YouTube channel and all that. So, yeah, snoop around there and have a listen and hear Imad and Yudit tell their own personal stories. There is new History of Germany items in the Podcastnik shop, which is podcastnikshop.com. So why not have a look? There's like Erbstücke, like heirlooms, t-shirts, and the Vandals t-shirt is up. And I'll take requests if you see one of the designs you like, but you want it on a cup or something. I don't know what to prioritize and get around to. And I just don't have that much time to curate the shop. But it is fun. And if you want, you know, you can order off the menu is what I'm saying. Drop us a line and sign up for our newsletter on the shop and all that and stay in touch through Podcastnik and podcastnikshop.com. All right. For special promo codes, I'm not going to mention all our sponsors now. We do have sponsors and we're very, very grateful, but I'll just put those in the show notes. So if you want to save money on headphones or classic books or that kind of thing, just take a look at, you know, that kind of changes with time. So it's better to just mention those in the show notes because I can edit that stuff rather than hard code it here where possible. Okay, we'll be right back. Up with that. If you support our sponsors, you really help us a lot. It's what keeps us afloat. At this point, honestly, we couldn't do it without your support and the support of our sponsors. So just thank you very much.
That's true. Yeah. Now we're back on track. We're at the Salian time. You remember 1024 was the Conrad II became king. And in the end of the Salian times was 1125 with the death of Henry V.
The one after Henry was Lothar, which was last episode. So that's that's where we are.
And afterwards, three Henrys, two of them real badasses.
Three Henrys and a Conrad, or three Ottos and a Henry. It's all, anyways.
We are at a time of great economic and cultural flowering. At the beginning of the Romanesque episode in Central Europe, the feudal system flourished between the 10th and the 13th century. Why this was, we have explained in the past episodes, I think.
We tried to, It happened slowly. Yes. It happened naturally, like organically. Just that's how society was. Yeah. It's all the Hungarians' fault. What?
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 Let's look on the castles. Castles now are more often at high altitudes and away from settlements for better protection and better overview over the landscape and the country. For the first time in history, many families name themselves after the new location of their castles. For example,
like Strusenberg.
I found no castle called Strusenberg. I would pretty enjoy.
It must be a fortified town or so, like a town on a hill? No, nothing. You didn't find anything?
No, I found just a Strusenberg drive in, I think it's upstate New York.
Okay, like some cousins of yours came through Ellis Island.
Maybe. But no fortification, no castle. I would like to have my own castle, Travis.
It's a castle name, totally. I mean, you know, just like lost to history, or they changed the name of the actual town, you know, something. But in theory, you're absolutely, you know, you're a Zeppelinburger. maybe it was a swamp castle or something.
Or the Staufers. I would really want to enjoy this, yes.
It's a branch of the Staufer, yeah. Yeah. Strusenberg was just a nickname for Hohenstaufen. You didn't know that? Yeah, of course. Here's your crown, your scepter.
Great.
In German, you'll just see so many examples of people that suddenly now are called like You know, like so-and-so Regensburg, so-and-so Nuremberg, so-and-so, whatever it is, you know. Not always nobility. Like literally, like the peasants are calling themselves like ich bin Hans von Supplenburg, but not like von as in title. Not, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'm Hans from that town. I'm Travis from Corvallis. You know, so then it gets shortened to I'm Travis Corvallis.
So everyone knows, yes, you're not the Travis from San Francisco, but the one from Corvallis. Yeah.
And, you know, some people were, yeah, and this is the same time where it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's Hansi the Müller, that's Hansi the blacksmith, Hansi Schmidt, that's Hansi of Bavaria, he came, you know, it's Hansi der Bayer, you know, that's, you know, that's, yeah, it's the time where
that's
last names
time,
start
yeah.
to kind of pop up now and then, yeah.
Mm. In the 11th century, of course, there were much castles built. Henry IV, we talked about it. He was a really keen castle builder. And for example, in the Harz, it's located in somehow in the middle of Germany. He tried to secure his power and his influence on the mining areas around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing that we kind of didn't really mention. Maybe it's in wrote it down somewhere, but. Of course, if you're the local, almost mayor, if this town is afraid of Hungarians and they build a castle, remember Nuremberg, the people built a castle and then the nobility came and built a castle next door. But it was actually like it was crowdsourced, locally funded. We need a castle for our protection if the Hungarians come, kind of thing. But later, Henry IV... This is exactly what you just said. Henry IV was like, actually, I need to secure an area, more than one town. I need to secure this mining region of the Harz Mountains in Germany. And so then you might build a, just like Nuremberg was, a crossroads. So there's a market to protect. So you're building a castle. And then you just said, like, maybe a castle was built outside of the city. That maybe, what if you were a Graf, like a Herzog, or, you know, some like really a big prince of a big region, not just one town. Almost like you have a capital city. So maybe you build a big castle outside of Cologne, which is where the bishop is, but then you're also looking at the whole region, not just Cologne. So yeah, it makes sense. Like you wouldn't just, things evolved. So you're not just having castles for a city, you're having castles for, a mining region, for instance. That's good to point out, yeah.
The castle, the way the castles were built changed from the 11th and 12th century on. There were more remains of stone buildings preserved, not only in castles, but also in churches, for example, like Romanesque churches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have different castle types. You have a traditional fortifications, fortified with ramparts and moats in the valley or on mountain spurs, consisting, the Martin Bailey, of course. Yeah. The fun thing is in German, moth is
Well.
It's an animal.
I think that might actually be like from a translation error. I think it's more like mot. But so towers, I think that's more like, what are those called? Not ramparts. There's a palisades, the wall. Tower, because it has little, there's a word for it where it just kind of sticks out a little bit. But yeah, so you can see parts of the wall from these little towers, basically.
Yeah. There were fortified residential towers, just simple towers where people lived in, surrounded by a ring wall and another wall that separates the forecourt. There in the forecourt were the kitchen with a brick stove, with a bathhouse, with an underfloor heating. There were farm building, and it was quite a real high comfort for a castle.
Yeah, I wonder. Okay, so if you've never
underfloor heating. You had this in Roman times and later, of course, but I wouldn't have expected this in a, like, 11th century
castle. So a lot of them didn't. I would say most didn't. You just start to see, because most had a fireplace in almost every room. And then I remember in, like, Karlstein, which was built in the 1350s or so, you know, in that era. So same kind of era where we're getting into right now. It was a... So because it's... So stone walls are cold. And then imagine the windows. They're tiny. But they didn't even always have glass, like in the really kind of earlier days of glass was more and more common, but at first it was very rare and very expensive. So even a duke couldn't always afford, you know, glass little plates to make windows out of. And you take these little tiny plates, like the bottom of a Coke glass, and you put them all together into a glass window. That cost a fortune. So instead what they had was just wooden shutters. So imagine... Germany's cold. I mean, Germany gets cold. I'm in California right now. Like, Germany's freezing compared to where we are right now. And in wintertime, you get two options. Shutters closed, and it smells. It just smells because you're just sleeping on straw. You're not really taking... You're washing yourself. It's not like there's a myth that medieval, like, peasants were dirty. We have sources that say they bathed daily, and we have sources that say they never bathed. So it just depends on who you believe, honestly. But even in castles, there was probably a smell. There was probably a little bit of a... People lived either all in the same room or, you know, kind of crowded. It really depends on, you know, if you're... You might just work in the castle. You might not be nobility. So now, do you leave the windows open and where it's freezing, or do you close the windows and... it's kind of, it's gross. And there's also, like, these superstitions of, like...
Yeah, well, the third
possibility. Yeah.
You had wooden frames.
Yes, I was going to say, so they would have wooden panels and also tapestries, which is now, I've seen a couple, but most of the tapestries from, like, the 10th, you know, like the Bayeux tapestry, which was made after the invasion of England, and that, you know, it kind of shows the Norman invasion, that would have hung all around a huge hall. It was like meters and meters and meters long, but it was also insulation. Like, it also kept everything warm. So you'd have wooden panels on top of the stone, and then cloth tapestries on top of that. And then, yes, you can open the windows now and then and air it out, and it would keep it warm, you know, if you had a fire
going.
I'm
not pretty sure in which time it was, but there was also, I read, there were wooden frames for the window holes, which were tensed with pergament.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Like, you had no clear glass.
Yep.
To watch out, but...
so light could come through, almost wind, like Japanese walls or something. You know, there's like just paper thin.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was dark. I mean, it was, if the light was the fire. Because even the windows were small, because you're also trying to be defensive. You don't want big, huge windows that people can, you know, knights can climb into. You had tiny little slits, maybe, or, you know, if it was higher up in a tower, still, you know, 50 centimeters by a meter, not these huge, you know, glass windows. So, yeah, it you have to kind of think of things a different way. I know that some people are listening only to hear, I want to hear about the fortifications and what did you, you know, if you were attacking a castle, what did you have to overcome? And we should mention a little bit, like, when I was a kid, me and my brother used to play in ruins of castles. Oh, shoot, I should actually mention, I want to say Hohenfreiberg, but I don't remember. there was this one castle we always went to in Bavaria. It's not that far from Munich, but it was just ruins, and you could play around. Like, they had stables, and you could go in pitch blackness. This was really, really interesting. But you could see, like, okay, here's where the main entryway, you could put logs, like huge pieces of wood, to just block the entrance. Just they fit into these slots, and then it was really hard to get through, and several of them. So every like 10 meters, you have another wooden wall, like a log wooden wall. And then, of course, while you're breaking through the wooden walls, on the ceiling, there's little slits where they could dump whatever. They could shoot at you with arrows. They could dump hot oil on you. They could dump tar on you. All kinds, you know, so just like these, it was really neat. Like, geez, they thought about this. The world's best engineers were put to task on, like, how do we kill people that are trying to attack this? And also, in this time, in the Crusades, we're getting there. How do we get, like, here's a, like, unconquerable castle. How do we actually, you know, do we start tunneling under the walls? Do we, then you have a moat. You can't tunnel under a moat. It will just fill with water. So how do you, you know, do you bombard it? Do you just besiege them? Wait for them to run out of water? This technology, this was an arms race. So, but you know, by the Crusader times, it really took off. And by the 13th century, 14th, 15th centuries, the fortified castles were like, wow. Like, okay, here's a tower that's 2 meters thick. The wall is 2 meters thick, 6 feet thick, okay? At the base, 3 meters, 4 meters. It's just this massive stone wall. And then you can shoot at people with arrows. You can always see the next tower over so they can defend each other. There's defenses against fire, defenses against tunnels, defenses, you know, just like it was this, like, just insane progression of castles. And actually, some castles in Czech Republic and Germany, they're proud to say, we were never conquered militarily.
Yes.
Ever. They were conquered many, 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 many times. But always, there was one person that would open the gates, or one person that would say, psst, and let them in through a window, or they would run out of food and say, okay, we surrender. Yep, you got us. We don't have any more water. We surrender, or cannibalism, you know, one or the other. But militarily, and some would just say, like, no, we're sustainable. We have enough animals here to last for many years, or there's even a secret tunnel where we can get more food. The best castles had secret tunnels, even Prague Castle, so many. The Nazis used them as, like, radio stations. Like, it's just all kinds of secret passageways, and everything you think is real in a fairy tale, like, you know, hidden passageways and tunnels outside so you could get water and get, you know, go hunting or whatever, and then sneak back through a siege. That all definitely existed. Not every castle had it, but if you look at Europe as a whole, anything you can think of, some medieval engineer thought of it too. And it, you know, there's a level of genius to the defense of castles. And then there's a level of genius to how to conquer a castle. Like, oh, we build bigger guns, bigger catapults, you know. So, oh, yeah. If we didn't talk about that a little bit, people would be like, hey, what about dumping hot oil on? Yeah, okay, it was a thing. You're welcome. Yep. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid, it was the, you know, why, you know, what's that? You know, you'd see the grooves in the walls and you'd, you know, like, why is that there? And why is that? And my poor mother, like, I don't know. Go play. Leave me alone. And we're just like, oh, this is so cool. And what was this?
And this time, all we can say, despite increasing stone construction, much of the castle was still timber.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them is not preserved until today. So much of that, what seems typical today to us as a castle, was not, did not exist back then in the 11th and 12th century. It still has to come later with the time of the Crusades and the time of the Staufers.
Yeah, I think I was almost boring listeners when, you know, it's like Otto the Great, Otto the Second, Otto the Third. I'm like, listen, these guys ruled on horseback. We have some Romanesque churches and castles the Saxons did start to build, but it was like Henry the, you know, the thousands of castles, that was later. That was like Salia. So, yeah, I was like, are people imagining big castles right now? Because no, Otto the Second ruled on horse, just like Charles the Great, and their court was in a field. They were like barbecuing, okay? That's how to imagine that. Now we come to, yeah, there was castles. Nobility was separate from peasants. That's So, you know, it's kind of hard to, like, the Middle Ages is just, it's like hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's why.
We talk about 1,000 years.
Honestly, yeah, so, until the early modern period, yeah. So, that's kind of why, it's just kind of like, how are people imagining, you know, Henry II? It's not, he wasn't like in a castle. He was like in a, you know, he was more like a tribal leader. He wasn't that far, like, he wasn't that far above Vikings or, you know, other, like, the Frankish people 300 years before. Maybe he was closer to the Charles the Great than, you know, the Habsburgers 300 years later. So, yeah, now I feel better about this because we're putting everything into perspective. I think what we'll do now is we'll summarize the rest, but we'll keep coming back to it later. Like, I would love to talk about when Germans, you know, in the Renaissance, like, Germans were studying Baroque, Rococo architecture, all that, just as well as Italians and French, the Gothic architecture, all that in France and Germany.
I love it. So
we'll come back to this. But yeah, if we stopped right now, there's barely castles the way you imagine. The Crusades are just starting, and it's the Crusades that would really make things explode. And when I look, if I think castle, just castle, I think of Karlstein in near Prague, 30 kilometers away from Prague. So Charles IV lived in Prague Castle, but he also had his private residence 30 kilometers away, like one day's ride away, for privacy, for security, and that was the real defensible thing. If Prague was attacked, Charles IV could be like, goodbye, and go to Karlstein and be safe. That's the 14th century. That's the same time as, like, Cossy in France. If you look that up, it's really interesting. Coucy. Okay. I just imagine a castle. I imagine Karlstein or Cossy Castle. But those are actually 14th century castles. We're not even there yet. The Gothic era is like, we're kind of starting, but it's not quite there. But when you come back from the Crusades, that's when you get, like, the Italian Renaissance happens shortly after. Gunpowder comes to Europe in 1320, okay? 1320s. So, suddenly you have artillery pieces firing from towers and castles. Stirling Castle in Scotland, as an example, Stirling Castle in Scotland, tried to fight the British. It didn't work because the British had cannons. So Stirling Castle, so they just blew the towers off of Stirling Castle. And now the towers are very short because there are, like, there are artillery towers. They used to be these really tall, you know, medieval castle towers. And so, yeah, Stirling Castle, you could see the whole narrow, you know, like, lower, the lowlands of Scotland, basically. But yeah, is like 1450s, there was cannons. You're talking like Italian Renaissance, people marching on, you know, the Neapolitan, like, those people marching on Rome. That's the Spaniards bringing cannons to Americas. Yes, there was bastions, really bigger, like, earthen fortifications, like these huge earthworks where a cannon would bounce off. So yes, we will talk about this later again, because we'll talk about, you know, certain invasions of attacking these, like, star-shaped fortifications and star-shaped city walls where they were built for cannons, so they're at angles, so the cannonballs would bounce off, and they can all support each other, so they're at angles where they can all see each other and give each other support. That comes after gunfire, you know, when there's bow and arrows.
If you mention the shape, in fact, the change of the shape of the castle began earlier in the 12th century. Mm-hmm. They changed from a quadratic form to a polygonal floor plan.
less to, blind to be, spots. Yeah.
It yeah, was, less, yeah. Less blind spots to be easier to protect the curtain walls. This change started during the 12th century and culminated in the early 13th century.
Yeah.
So we move away from the great hall look to a more smaller room. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to actually picture some, because then you see palaces where it's not about fortification, but about showing off. So then you see great halls again. But yeah, the castles, definitely, it was different purposes. So you start to see more chateaus and more really defensible, militaristic, military installations.
Yeah.
And less the king lives, the Herzog's house kind of thing.
And the changes have in fact something to do with the Crusades, because the soldiers were influenced of seeing Byzantine and Muslim fortifications, which are different from what we have here in Central Europe.
They were 10 times, to them it was just the walls are 3 times higher, 3 times thicker, oh my goodness, we're going to die. And then they learned and started to build bigger and bigger things. And there was a lot. There's a lot of castles. If you go up the, we talked about the Romantic Road, the Romantic Straße or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. It's just castle, cathedral, medieval town. There's actually, so one number we got here is there's 14,000 castles were built in German-speaking areas out of, let's call it, 100,000 castles in Europe, depending on exactly how you define it and so forth. But yeah, 100,000 times some rich guy decided we got to build defensively, or a town said we need to defend ourselves. And yeah, so it's basically every county had several castles. Prague has 2 in the city. Karlstein is 30 kilometers away. And within 30 kilometer radius, there's probably 20, 30, 40. All the Liechtensteins, the Schwarzenbergs, they all have their own little castle around, central Bohemia. The Rhineland. Because France and Germany have been best friends for so they're staring at each other every 20 kilometers. Let's paint you a picture. Every 10 kilometers, imagine north-south, with the Rhine River being one of those lines. Every 10 kilometer, there's a line. Every mountain ridge, there's a line of castles. A string, a chain of castles. The Maginot Line, built for in the 1930s for the same reason as every other defensive line was built, so that the Germans don't attack or the French don't attack. The Maginot Line is one of 50 lines of these rows of castles. On the Rhine, you'll see castles dotted. If you go up the Rhine River, it's just, on a boat, it's beautiful. It's just
beautiful.
Castle.
If you go by boat or if you go by train, rolls up at Rhine River, you can see the Lorelei and you can see... Yep. A lot of beautiful castles, literally up on every hill. It's
also 30 kilometers west of the Rhine, there's also a string of castles, and also in Alsace, on the French side, of course, the Maginot Line, but also a bunch of French castles. And yeah, it's because every generation there was a war there between Germans and French somehow, somewhere, and someone built a castle bigger and better and so forth. And they're all within, so from one castle, you can see the next one almost. I mean, they're, just really defensive. The whole thing is defensible. But yeah, you can just go castle hopping. You just, from the French-German region, there's just hundreds.
Yeah.
You just go from one to the other.
It's really beautiful. I love it.
So do you have any, would you, you know, on the top of your head, do you have any like that you would recommend for Americans to go see, or what are your favorite castles?
I don't care about this bourgeoisie crap. I love
I love castles in general. I like the Heidelberg Castle, for example, as well as Schloss Linderhof, one of these crazy castles of Ludwig II.
Yep. I was going to mention some of his, yeah. So yeah. Linderhof is... okay. So he has... there's like Herrn am Chiemsee or something, where he has... It's basically
Herrn am Chiemsee, yes.
There was a... It's a replica of Versailles. Nymphenburg is his little dream castle he built for... was it Nymphenburg that had the Swan Underground Lake? Or, no, that was Neuschwanstein. Okay,
No. The Swan Underground Lake is Islinderhof.
Okay, that's Linderhof. Grotto. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The grotto with the lake and the swan boat. Yes, this is Linderhof.
Okay, which
one? It's so kitschy. Nymphenburg is, I think it was not. I'm pretty much not sure if it was built by Ludwig himself or by his father. This is really right. near Munich.
That's another sort of Versailles replica. That's right. Yeah, it was just a residence. It's just a opulent palace chateau building. Then of course Neuschwanstein is a romantic idea of what a castle was like in the Middle Ages. Totally unpractical and unrealistic, untrue. But that's the castle that the Disneyland castle is based off of. That's Neuschwanstein, and I have a grandfather clock with Neuschwanstein engraved on the pendulum, you know, like it's a really famous Bavarian thing.
In fact, one of my very favorite castle, my favorite castle is the Hohenzollern.
Right. Oh, okay. Hohenzollern. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen that one. I don't know. Okay, cool. But it's like a big chateau, like a palace, or what is that?
Oh, you
I'm Googling it right now.
Google it.
Oh yeah, Jesus, that is a castle.
This is amazing.
That looks like the freaking Disneyland castle. It's almost like a Crusader castle. It's just this massive tower,
it's,
you know.
In fact, no Crusader's castle. It was rebuilt in the 19th century.
Because it looks ridiculous. It's like towers growing out of towers. It's just ridiculous. Beautiful.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally romanticized, as you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So kind of the same idea as like Neuschwanstein, like these romantic, like nostalgia for what a castle might have been. And then one of them is on Herrn am Chiemsee, maybe. One of those is an island, or is that Nymphenburg? No, not Nymphenburg.
On an island, this is Herrn am Chiemsee. What you told a replica of Versailles, the mirror.
Yeah, it has the mirror. I just Googled it. The mirror, Hall of Mirrors.
At least larger than the one of in Versailles. Yep. And it was never finished, the castle, because Ludwig ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm think it is Herrn am Chiemsee, where he never lived.
Because in Neuschwanstein, there's the castle right next door, which is like...
Hohenschwangau?
Schwangau, exactly, yeah.
Hohenschwangau, yeah.
And so he just lived there. I mean, he would go next door to kind of... So he might have lived there in a way, but only like a fourth or so was done, like completed, so... Most
yeah, but I pretty
he did,
like
I think he moved in
because
he also had like the Wagner. Yeah, I mean he had like
yeah, it's much more cozy and sweet.
He entertained there for sure. Yeah, but so like on an island on a lake, there's a replica of Versailles, except it's better than Versailles in every way, on purpose because it's a German king with inferiority complexes trying to compete with the French, like, yes, pretty much straight up. It's like, yeah, so we have a Hall of Mirror too, but it's, you know, it's twice as big as that little one in Paris. You know, like, oh.
I pretty much loved the bedroom of Ludwig in Hohenschwangau because over his bed, the wall is painted blue with the golden stars. And in the middle of some of the stars, there are crystal rod going up to the next.
Like up
there, the servants could sit with some candles.
Yeah.
And light crystal bar a rod.
It's like fiber optics. It's exactly the same idea as like fiber optics. Yeah. Just, yep.
Yeah. For your own castle, I think you can keep it as an idea.
You know what makes me sad is I'm looking at, this has to be said on this episode, I feel like, but what makes me sad is I see these pictures of Hohenschwangau, and it's fully furnished, fully decorated. All the paintings, all the tapestries, all the furniture are there. And in the Czech Republic, I was just on some castle tours last year, and it's sad because it's stripped bare. We were at one of the really haunted ones, for instance, at Hoska, and all the furniture is gone. It's now they there was some communist dignitary that lived, you know, some communist high-ranking officer that lived there in the upper floor, so he had some pretty modern furniture, honestly. It wasn't, you know, I'm looking at these pictures and it's just like floor to ceiling to, you know, just totally just bedecked in crazy tapestry, gilded, you know, wood carvings, paintings, everything. And yeah, you know, I wonder how East Germany is because of communism. Like, they just didn't care. In fact, not didn't care. It was evil. It was a bad thing. This bourgeoisie nobility crap, you know, burn it, get rid of it.
Another castle, it's a very small one, would I like to. It's on the Schwäbische Alb. It's called Schloss Liechtenstein. It's very pretty. It's also a 19th century castle, one just built for representation. After a novel, in fact. First there was a novel where the castle was described, and then someone read this novel and said, oh, is this beautiful? And then he built the castle.
That is super cute. That is like, yes, everybody needs to look up Schloss Liechtenstein or Castle Liechtenstein. Holy shit.
Yes.
That is like,
it's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. It's so sweet on this mountain, on this rock.
Yeah. That is so cool. It's like one Gothic house. Not even, it's just a house with towers coming out of the ceiling, kind of. And the striking feature about it is that the whole thing is very tall. So it's already on a cliff face all the way around. Like, you have to access it by bridge, like literally a drawbridge in the sky. Like, that's what this is. And then it's actually kind of a Mott and Bailey setting. You have to go through the Mott to get to the Bailey. That's exactly what that is. But it's like vertical. It just shoots up into the sky. It's just like a skyscraper. It's amazing. It just looks like it goes up. Really cool. Yeah, that's cute.
If you're in Germany next time, we have to go there. These are some of my favorite castles. Do you have favorite castles, Travis?
So I can't remember the one we used to play in, and I wish, so it was, it's kind of sad because it was just ruins. It was like really early, like 11th century kind of thing in Bavaria. And shoot, I'm going to remember as soon as we stop recording, I'll remember. But you could just go there and play, like, just, you know, it was a safety hazard, but you could just go play. And now that everything, there's like, they made it touristy. So there's like glass and steel and there's railings and you can't go there and you can't go there and you can't go there. And, you know, I went back as an adult and was like, oh, that's okay. It's probably for the best. And you can read about the history and everything. But I was also sad because when we were kids, we used to go play in a castle. And now, yeah, whatever that one's called, that's my favorite castle probably. But then I have a love-hate relationship with Neuschwanstein because I like it. I have, you know, Neuschwanstein, like, souvenirs and stuff. Like, I like it. I think it's a neat story. If I was a billionaire like Bill Gates, I would build Neuschwanstein. Exactly. It's a beautiful piece of art. However, every time I had a visitor visit me in Munich, they'd be like, let's go to Neuschwanstein. And Neuschwanstein is not in Munich. It's like 6 hours away. It's just a day gone. And the last five times I was at Neuschwanstein, I was just like, fine, let's go. Fine. Are you done yet? Hurry, take the tour. Let's go. And so it's kind of like, I'm over it. My favorite cat. Yeah. So I really like, Holska. I think it's called Holska. It was one of the Schwarzenberg hunting castles in Bohemia in Czech Republic, and they renovated it in the 19th century also. So it's like, it's just white. You go through the forest and then it's just this white, you know, like romantic, same thing like Neuschwanstein, but very, very small, like cute kind of. And I'll mention, we did an episode on those castles, on a couple castles on the Bohemican podcast, bohemican.com or podcastnik.com. We did a couple of destination episodes. We went to, like Karlstein. We did one on Karlstein, told the whole history of the castle. We did one on Hoska, which is haunted. We did a video on that, actually. It's on the Bohemican YouTube channel. So you can actually see, we do give some tours of castles on video. You can see them. But also, yeah, we talk about like maybe a half dozen castles around the Czech Republic. So like Austrian built castles.
There's a Schloss in Regensburg, the Thorn in Taxis.
Oh, that's I right. Think, okay.
We should do an heirloom episode about Thorn in Taxis.
I actually wanted to do an episode about the family.
Yeah.
Because about they invented... They didn't invent for the first time, but they had a weird like messaging system, which was like the old post. And so, yeah, they're interesting. It's more like a residence, a palace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I haven't been there, in fact. But I'm
so
pretty
it
sure.
It was a countess or something.
Yeah.
But she was pretty
Gloria.
Old. Is she still her? Is still the same person?
Gloria of Thorn in Taxis.
She's a little bit older, right? Like, I think it's the same person. I don't remember when I read about her, but it was like 10 years ago or something. So I was kind of wondering, like, she was old. Maybe it's her daughter.
She's 58?
Oh, it must be her daughter. Okay. Oh, I don't know. Okay, I'll have to check. Yeah. Oh, we'll look at that. That's interesting. Okay, yeah. So that your castle in Ringsburg is kind of more like a nice little chateau. It's more like Versailles than some fortress, but yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you can... I think they lived there. I'm not pretty sure if you can visit it.
It might be... Yeah, so I've been to a lot of castles in Scotland where they actually live in half, and then the other half they have tours. So you don't know, like, oh, that's oh, cool. If I knock on the bedroom, there's the, you know, Duke of Clanmacnoise or something is there. So.
You can visit it. Oh, so I have to go and
there you go.
Visit yeah. it and have to tell you about this,
we'll
I think,
we'll
on a later.
Yeah. Cool. So definitely stay tuned for more castle stuff. We'll come back. You know, I also love, so I like art history and the history of architecture and all these things. So I'm not going to be able to help it. You know, we will come back to like Gothic sort of castles and Baroque and Rococo and all these things that kind of happened after the Renaissance. And yeah, so for
you
now, we
what?
Just mentioned that things stopped being defensive and started to be more ornate, but we'll come back to that. Definitely.
I'm pretty interested which are the favorite castles of our listeners. I think you should leave us a comment or...
Yeah.
Or
ping us on Twitter, at podcastnik, or at Germany Podcast.
Have
you been to Germany? Have you been castle hopping? Did you go to Neuschwanstein? Did you go to Hohenzollern? Did you go to Liechtenstein? Yeah.
Or what are your favorite places? I think... there were some crazy American guys buying castles in Europe.
Oh yeah.
And rebuild them in the States. In
that
some
also
places.
Happened. Yep. The original Tower of London is the original London Bridge is in Arizona, for instance.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I could mention we do have Castillo de Amoroso in Napa Valley. That is actually a 5-story castle, like 2 floors down, 3 floors up. So it has like a dungeon and everything. Someone built a stone castle using medieval techniques in Napa Valley, California. I don't know how earthquake proof that makes it, but it is there. I've been there. It is fantastic. I've been to a
crazy
Spanish castle in California. So there's a lot of crazy Americans, but I do know. I mean, I read of an American couple that bought a chateau in France, and then there was a lot of red tape because they said, "Well, it's a historic building, and this, blah blah blah." And they were getting angry because they were saying, "Listen, if no one buys it, it's going to crumble into ruins. It's already at the breaking point of, you know, should we even restore it? It's going to cost $1 million just to fix." And finally, the French government said, you know, finally they signed the contract. They bought it, and then they're trying to restore it as best as they can. And there's all these weird thoughts about it. Like, how do I feel about Americans coming into Europe and buying the best real estate? But on the other hand, the local French didn't like it at all. They were just like, oh, it's this bourgeois mansion. No one has the money to fix it up. The government didn't care because it was a small chateau, not a famous castle. So the government has, you know, it's too expensive. Same in Germany. If every single building that was old had government protection and spending, government would go bankrupt. You just can't do it. So it's like, yeah, this American company, married couple came in, bought a chateau, fixed it up. It's beautiful. You know, I love that. But yeah, it's a neat story.
Yeah.
Why not? Buy a chateau in France. That's the dream. Next time is Hildegard of Bingen. So we'll learn about a German scientist and visionary who, like, literally visionary who saw visions. Or I interviewed collaborated with Noah Tetzer from The History of Vikings. So maybe that'll be, they're both recorded. So those are the next two episodes coming up. If you want to get some history on when we talk about Vikings, we're going to jump back in time to like the 8th, 9th century, that kind of era. Go check out thehistoryofvikings.com. And take a look at the sort of topics he has already, and we'll kind of touch on some of those and talk about Germany specifically, but like Norse mythology, and compare that to what we talked about with Saxon mythology. So yeah, go check out thehistoryofvikings.com, and he's only been around for a couple of months, so see what Noah's about, and then we'll have him on the show here. All right.
Thanks for listening.
Yay! Tschüss!
And tschüss!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.